Benjamin. Chapter 10. I've heard of the angelic movement. Yes, I agree that the world situation is dire. Yes, I believe drastic action is required. But the day I ally myself with those who use God as a cover for genocide is the day you'll see me dead. America, come deal with the monsters you've made. Head Speaker Ngozi Adamu, 2038 International Climate Conference. I have no idea what's going on when I walk into the media room for my first watch meeting. The media room is crammed with mismatched seats, board games, and a cracked flat-screen TV. One wall is stenciled with a vapid inspirational quote from the before times that just feels hollow now, like a smile drawn on a dead body. The watch itself is sprawled in a haphazard pile across torn couches and ripped seats. There are two empty spots. One has to be Trevor's. I try to picture him in the room with us, but his face is a void and bones stick out of his chest. I'm saved from the thought by Aisha, raising her voice to cut off Cormac's sentence, which I'd tuned out as soon as I opened the door. It was capitalism, she says, pointing hard at the ground. Salvador props Zir chin on Zir hand, watching lazily. Nick isn't here. It was always capitalism and colonialism. It... What? No, don't look at me like that, Cormac.
Rich bastards need to hush,
Faith interjects when Cormac tries to retort. Normal people are talking. We weren't rich, Cormac snaps. I ease the door shut behind me. We were comfortable. Your parents owned the Acresfield Country Club, Salvador groans. Shut the fuck up.
Hey, Ben.
Everyone turns. Cormac glares. Benji, actually, is the only thing I can think of to say.
What's going on?
Nothing, Faith says. Come on, sit. I take the spot next to Salvador because it's as far away from Cormac as I can get. I can't handle him right now. I barely slept last night, even after Nick and I got back from the rescue mission. I kept having to go out back to throw up, and I saw the grace every time I closed my eyes, and the prayer for the dead always came back, sacrilege poised on my lips. Oh, Lord. I'm getting sicker. Are we just waiting on Nick? I ask. Salvador blows out a breath.
Yep. Some shit went down this morning, so we're not pressed. He'll get here when he gets here.
I frown.
Some shit.
Yeah, Aisha mutters.
Some shit.
Faith skims a hand down her arm the way you'd comfort a little sister. Cormac kicks his feet up on the table and keeps staring at me.
I'm sorry I wasn't there at breakfast,
Faith whispers to Aisha. Aisha ducks her eyes.
It's fine.
It looks like everyone has let the funeral incident go. Aaron made it clear Alex and I had both lost someone and weren't doing our best, but Cormac. With Seraph getting into my head, making everything burn, it might be best if I just stay away. Even though it would be really satisfying to punch Cormac in the face. Did his parents actually own a country club? Figures. It doesn't come to that. Nick walks into the room like he just crawled out of bed. His hair is falling out of its pins and his knuckles are white around the bead lizard. This is the Nick I saw lowering his head to the Vanguard, whispering, okay, okay. The one pinned under the grace. Not the Nick that slammed me into the bodega shelves and knocked me to the floor. We don't say anything. We just look at him. He stops in front of us and in a second, he's back. Too quiet in here, he says, rolling beads between his fingers. What's wrong? Cormac points to me.
I told you, I'm not working with him.
My face burns, blood rushing to the surface, a seraph burn. It's glorious, getting angry so quickly. Maybe the flood has given me something in return for my body. The anger I never let myself have as a little girl, the rage I swallowed down every day of my life.
It feels like it's slotting into place where it was meant to be all along. Under my mask, I bite down hard on my cheek. Nick blinks slowly at Cormac, unimpressed.
Yes, I heard you the first time.
Then what the fuck? As Cormac talks, I suck on my teeth, fingers digging into the armrest. You saw what he did to Alex.
Salvador hums. I think you're just jealous they're paying more attention to him than you.
Oh my God, their boyfriend just died, Aisha says. Leave them out of it.
Guys, Faith cuts in, come on.
I can't help myself. I'm right here, asshole.
Cormac gets up from his chair, vibrating with anger.
You tried to kill them. They tried to crack my head open.
Nick hooks his foot under the edge of the coffee table and hoists it up. It flips with a terrible crash, sending books, papers, and pens scattering across the floor. I yelp. Faith swears, cords of muscle standing out in her neck.
That's enough,
Nick snarls. My skin prickles with excitement. The noise, the shouting, I could get used to this. I could leave the old Benji behind, the one who cowered behind Mom's robes and fell to my knees on the bridge.
All of you.
Cormac sinks back into the chair. Aisha looks away. I take a long, deep breath, expanding my chest until my lungs ache, and then letting it out slowly through my nose. The heat settles into a comfortable place in my chest, right below my ribs, under the sternum, among flesh, bone, and organs, where everything should be.
Thank you, Nick says.
He primly readjusts the nose of his mask. I wish I could read underneath it, see what's going on there, figure out what he's hiding from us.
We have something important to talk about.
We nod, suddenly one group again, pulled together for what we're here to do. Nick has that effect on us. I allow myself to admit that it is beautiful, the same way he is, even if I still want to dig my nail into my ring finger.
Nick leans against an overstuffed armchair, lording over us. In 4 days, he says, a pilgrimage of angels will be heading to Reformation Faith Evangelical Church for an initiation ceremony.
Wait, he's not actually considering.
After intercepting papers concerning the details last week and considering the trouble we've had with the Vanguard, it's in our best interest to intervene. If anyone has any objections, speak now.
I open my mouth, but nothing comes out.
It's decided, Nick says. In less than a week, we are going to Reformation, where the Death Squad was taking me, the heart of the angelic movement in Atchison and one of the worst places I have ever been, to kill as many angels as we can. The next 4 days slog by but pass far too quickly. I wake up every day sluggish and crash every night, exhausted. I imagine this is what Theo felt as a new Death Squad soldier, reeling from a taste of the Flood and desperately trying to keep up. Cormac avoids me, but I still hear him bragging about his rich parents, as if that matters anymore. I ask Aisha about her doomsday prepper family, and she talks about underground bunkers in West Virginia until she gets distracted by Sadaf. I learn Faith used to be in the Coast Guard when she goes on a soft-spoken but firm tirade about the inherent cruelty of the armed forces and what a mistake it was to join. We quiz each other on maps of Atchison to make sure we can get back to the Alk if we're separated. Nick teaches me how to load and unjam a pistol, and I pretend I'm not staring at him more than I'm looking at the gun. Nobody notices I'm only taking half my allotted water rations and barely any food. The pantry empties quickly. Even when a boy named Micah butchers rabbits and squirrels in the courtyard, it barely makes a dent in how much food we go through a day. Taking even a granola bar makes me feel guilty. The first respite I get is lunch with Salvador on the second day. We've got a back table in the kitchen, and I'm picking at half a can of tuna. The two of us are supposed to be studying Reformation's floor plans,
Aisha found a copy of the blueprints in City Hall months ago, and they're currently laid out on the table. But I already know the layout, and Salvador insists on a meal break. I don't know much about Salvador, and Z seems quite fine with that. My one question about Zir's scars is met with a wink and, "Care to tell me why you were kidnapped by angels?" I glare. "Exactly." Z leans back in the flimsy plastic chair, gesturing at me with Zir's fork. "But I'm curious, so humor me. What convinced you to join? Because the watch ain't fun. I'm sure it'd be easier to scrub the floors and let us do the hard shit." There's not much to say. "Nick recommended it." "That can't be all." When I frown, Z can actually see it, since eating is one of the few times we take down our masks. I've tried waiting around for Nick to eat, but he always takes his food upstairs. Salvador taps at the scar on Zir's lip, which has bent Zir's mouth into something uneven. I say, "If I tell you the reason why I'm here, will you tell me about Nick?" "That's not fair. Nobody knows jack fuck about him." There goes that. I drag my fork through the remains of my tuna. I don't even like fish, but I haven't eaten all day, and hunger is starting to make me sluggish. I'm sure there's some Bible quote that's woven itself into my skin about sacrifice, or maybe something from High Reverend Father Ian Clevenger's rambling manifesto, but all I remember is the feeling. Another mouth. More food. I'm sick and shouldn't bother. "Really?" I manage. I shouldn't even be asking about Nick. He's my commander and nothing else. That sucks. "Well, Erin knows everything about him, but good luck getting her to talk. She's a steel trap." Salvador looks over at Aisha, who is sitting on the other side of the room with a book, Faith beside her. "You'd have an easier time getting Aisha to date a white girl." Aisha pipes up. "Piss off." Faith snorts into her cup of water. I tuck my head in closer. "Wait, she and Faith aren't..." "Nope. Besides, Faith is aromantic, and Aisha wants to ask out Sadaf." "I can hear you," Aisha protests. "So what?" Salvador calls back. "We're not talking shit." I say, "So you know everybody's business." "I do my best. Tommy used half our supply of antibiotics last month when they got a UTI banging loose, which, ew, why would you? Cormac is a bottom. Erin actually used to have a crush on Nick before she found out he's gay, and I'm surprised I even got that out of her. Look, give me something and I'll give you something. How's that sound?" "Nick is gay?" I rein in my expression before Z notices. "I mean, I'd figured he was something if he was here, but it doesn't matter. I'm betrothed. I'm an angel. I am Seraph. I am the avatar of the Flood. Crushes are a waste of time when I'm just weeks away from being God's wrath incarnate. Besides, cis gays are the worst. I've only been part of the ALK for a few days and I'm already picking up on strange divides in the queer community. I can almost hear one of the other trans guys mocking cis gays to his friend, wrinkling his nose and whining, "Ew, pussy, I could never." Like they think not having a dick makes us lower tier men, like there's something wrong with us. It's just that I don't get along with the other trans guys here. One turned up his nose at me, and I've been too awkward to approach the others. "All right," I say, "I'll give you something. But you have to answer my next question the best you can." Salvador perks up, eyes flashing. "Go for it." "I said I'm in it just because Nick thought I should be. But there are so many things I could say. I could make myself seem selfless, taking on the hardest jobs just because I feel like I should. Or I could hint that someone who forgives me for being Seraph deserves every ounce of myself I can give them. So I say it all. As simply as possible. They took my dad. I want to make them regret it." Salvador says, "So you're in it for revenge?" "Yes, maybe. Distilled down to its most basic parts, yes. but the word feels too heavy.
Revenge has lost its weight. Everyone wants someone to suffer for something.
Yeah, kind of.
So much anger packed into such a little body, Salvador laughs.
How very trans boy of you.
All right, intriguing. I like it. What do you want to know?
There's this one guy, I say, also trans, a little taller than me. Shitty stick and poke tattoos. What's his name? Carl, Clay, you know him, right?
With the bad haircut? That's Calvin.
Z eyes me. Please tell me you don't have a crush on him.
God, no. He'll barely give me the time of day. What's his problem?
If he's just not talking to you, you're getting off easy.
Z watches the door as if Calvin could walk in any second, which he technically could.
He nearly beat the shit out of Aisha earlier, calling her a liar and a bunch of other nasty stuff. He's the worst. Like being a dick will make up for his lack of one.
I barely suppress a laugh.
Let me guess what he was throwing a fit about. You're white, so...
Oh, was it because you don't bind?
It's not obvious I don't. It's not like I have much to work with, but once you know what to look for, it's impossible not to see it. I cross my arms over my chest anyway.
That must be all the answer Salvador needs.
Look, he's awful. He bought into a bunch of gatekeeping rhetoric before that day, and all he does is lick boots. Said I was making a mockery of the trans movement for using fake pronouns, and I nearly strangled him. Pinkwashed colonialism and all that.
A long, angry breath.
Feel free to deck him if you want. I'm sure Aisha would appreciate it.
I don't need any ideas.
The night before we head to Reformation, Micah catches a deer. It's small and withered, tongue hanging out of its mouth. He says we're lucky it's small. We're running low on sugar and salt for curing, so we'll have to eat as much as we can tonight to keep it from going to waste. When the sun goes down, we light a fire in the courtyard with plywood pulled off windows across the street. The deer is laid out on a tarp, and pieces are put over the flames, sizzling and spitting. The sniper guard breathes in the smell of cooking meat and turns back to the streets, just in case the smoke attracts attention. Someone runs up the stairs to give them the first pieces. There's not enough room for everyone to gather in the courtyard with the fire and Trevor's fresh grave, so most people stay in the Alk lobby. But Calvin is by the radio, getting too close to it for Alex's liking and causing a snarling match, so I wander out to the yard and sit by the fence. It's a quiet night. The heat of day still lingers, cut by the breeze. Flames crackle, and the sharp tang of smoke tastes warm on my tongue, even through the mask. The firelight itself bathes faces in shades of gold, lighting up eyes that shine with laughter they keep choked up so they aren't heard. People move in packs, leaning on friends, faces tucked into shoulders and against thighs. It reminds me of the movies I saw before Mom took us to New Nazareth, groups of friends cuddling up, close enough to inhale one another's air. Aaron lingers by Micah, disgusted by the raw meat but taking great interest in the way his hands work the knife. Sadaf wanders out into the grass, and Aisha follows, reaching for her arm. I stay by the fence, alone. I've been pressed up against the watch all day, and I don't feel like explaining my growling stomach to anyone. And more than anything, I need some time to myself. I kick off my shoes and spread my hands in the cool grass. The fence smells of wet wood. Weeds creep up the slats and tangle in my fingers. The Milky Way shines in a silver streak above the buildings and clouds. Revelation 21, verse 1.
And I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth were passed away.
No, the first heaven and the first earth were murdered.
I don't notice Nick beside me until the rattle of plastic beads makes it past my thoughts. He's leaning against the fence, toy lizard in hand,
staring into the fire.
"You eat yet?" he says when I look up at him, even though he doesn't look at me.
"I'm fine."
"Not what I asked. I'm not hungry."
Of course, my stomach picks that moment to growl. Nick kicks away from the fence and walks into the crowd. A minute later, he returns with two handfuls of sizzling meat, using folded up printer paper as plates. He tosses one down to me.
"Eat."
Grudgingly, I do. It's still fire hot, the same way my hands, stomach, and throat feel, and I balance it on my thighs to keep it from burning my fingers. This is more food than I've eaten at once in days, but it's so warm and smells so good. I can't stop myself. It falls apart in my mouth, taste bursting across my tongue. There's so much flavor, it makes my jaw ache. It's barely salted, barely seasoned because we have so little to spare, but it's the best thing I've tasted in forever. Nick says,
"Are you going to be all right tomorrow?"
I shrug, peeling off another piece. When I accidentally touch a part that burns, I stick my finger into my mouth.
"I'll have to be."
He snorts and pulls down his mask to take a bite.
I stare without an ounce of shame. He has the squishy face of a teenager, like cookie dough that isn't finished baking, baby fat that puberty hasn't wiped away just yet. But there's strength to his jaw, in the hard way his lips are set, something that says, sure, he's handsome now, but just you wait. Just wait and see what he grows into. It'll be worth it.
He doesn't have stubble. For some reason, that surprises me. Maybe I'd just gotten used to it. Theo was starting to get patchy, awkward facial hair when I left, and he used to rub it on me to piss me off, leaving red burns on my neck and cheeks. I dig my nail into where my engagement ring used to be and shove more venison into my mouth. The flavors aren't as strong this time.
Nick says, "All you have to do is give the signal and make sure the abominations don't kill us."
I know. We've decided I'll be on lookout since it needs to be done anyway, and it's the way to hide what I can do. As far as the rest of the watch knows, my job is to find a vantage point, wait until the angels are distracted, and fire the first shot. Easy enough for the new guy, and still more than most others are willing to do.
See Aisha for your uniform before we leave.
Yeah. We're silent for a moment together, just eating, catching juice that rolls over our chins. Someone barks with laughter and claps a hand over their mouth in apology. The food settles in my stomach and I feel warm. Not burning, but warm. Like I'm somehow sitting next to the fire, even though I'm all the way across the courtyard. Gentle. Cozy. There's so much bustle over there and inside the Alk. So many bodies. So much silent noise. It's quiet over here. Just us. The food, the grass, and the sky. Nick says,
"It's okay to be scared."
I look up. "What?"
"Your hair is getting in your face again."
He digs out another set of bobby pins and hands them over.
"Don't lose these. I don't have that many."
It's okay to be scared. It hadn't hit me until now that my teeth were grinding again.